So if you drop a coffee mug, right, it just shatters on the floor. And we immediately blame gravity. We just automatically assume the Earth reached up with this invisible tether and pulled it down.
Yeah, I mean, we thought that way for centuries.
Exactly. But what if there was no pole? Like, what if that mug fell simply because the actual space just below it was, running out of time faster than the space above it?
It's completely wild to think about. It is a complete inversion of how we intuitively experience the world. I mean, since Newton, we've operated on the assumption that mass pulls mass.
Right, heavy stuff pulls other heavy stuff.
Exactly. But if you strip away that assumption, you open up the possibility that gravity isn't a physical force at all. It might just be a geometric illusion caused by the uneven flow of time.
And that is exactly the mission of today's deep dives. We are looking at this highly theoretical, completely fascinating framework called the Conditional Collapse Theory Framework, or CCT.
Yeah, specifically a text titled The Time Gravity Equivalence.
Right. And the mission today is to completely rewire how you understand reality, gravity, and the cosmos. We are moving far beyond classical physics to explore a model where mass is literally an illusion, time dictates gravity, and black holes might actually be the universe's, like, engines for creating life.
It's a lot to wrap your head around.
It really is. Whether you are a seasoned physicist or just someone who loves a mind-bending aha moment, this deep dive is going to fundamentally shift your perspective. Okay, let's unpack this.
So to get to the bottom of what this paper is arguing, we first have to deconstruct what we think of as matter. The framework introduces this foundational concept called the boundary
The
paradox.
boundary paradox, okay.
Right. It asks us to visualize a volume of space that is strictly forbidden. And by forbidden, it means absolutely no particle, no energy wave, and no information can enter the specific region.
This is a total, like, blockade right in the middle of space.
Correct. Now, in classical physics, we would look at that region and say, well, it is entirely empty.
Because there's nothing in it.
Exactly. But this framework operates on a sort of transcendental logic that claims the exact opposite. It argues that a forbidden volume is actually 100% full. It is full of its own exclusion.
Okay. A volume being full of nothing is a bit of a mental hurdle. But let's try to visualize it like a VIP section at a really crowded club.
Oh, I like that.
Right. So even if there's absolutely no one physically standing inside the VIP area, the velvet ropes establish a forbidden volume. The crowd can't walk through it, so they have to warp and crush together around the edges.
That's a great way to picture it.
So even though the space is technically empty, its strict boundaries dictate the shape of the room just as much as, like, a giant physical pillar would.
That analogy actually perfectly models the math behind what the author calls the probability manifold. You can think of the universe as this massive landscape of potential states that particles can occupy.
Okay.
When a volume becomes forbidden, it creates a literal hole in that manifold. The universe, which the author refers to as the underlying substrate, has to mathematically compensate for that missing data.
Because the VIP section is blocked off.
Right. It curves the surrounding probability landscape around the forbidden zone. By treating forbidden and full as mathematically indistinguishable, the author redefines the very seed of gravity. Gravity doesn't start with heavy stuff. It starts with absence.
Wait, let me push back on that slightly. So the text is arguing that the mass of a planet isn't actually stuff pulling on us. It's literally just a massive collection of microscopic do not enter signs for information.
What's fascinating here is that this specific redefinition resolves a massive conceptual gap in physics. Standard physics treats matter and gravity as distinct but interacting phenomena.
Like two different systems.
Exactly. But in the CCT framework, a persistent exclusion zone, your do not enter sign, is all that matter is. The universe doesn't care if there's a heavy rock sitting in space or just a perfectly impenetrable shield of nothingness.
Because the effect is the same.
Yes. Both of them force the surrounding fabric of reality to warp in the exact same way.
That is a staggering way to view reality. I mean, it brings up a huge mechanical question. If matter is just this forbidden volume that curves the probability space, how exactly does it make my coffee mug fall?
Right, the actual mechanism of falling.
Yeah, because if the velvet ropes aren't reaching out and dragging the club goers toward them, what is causing the motion? The text argues it doesn't pull. It says it slows down time. But how does empty space slow down time?
To understand the mechanism, we have to look at the universe's underlying operating system. The text models the universe's substrate as an XOR automaton.
Like the logic gates used in computer programming.
Exactly. An XOR, or exclusive OR logic gate, is designed to look for differences. If you feed it two identical inputs, like two zeros or two ones, it outputs a zero. It cancels them out.
Okay.
In this framework, completely empty space is just endless, perfect cancellation. Everything ticks forward in perfect synchronous harmony according to the substrate's universal clock.
But the velvet ropes disrupt that. The forbidden volumes are inputs that don't match the empty space around them.
Precisely. When the XOR grid scans a forbidden volume, it can't cancel it out. It encounters a difference. The author defines this localized, unresolvable glitch as a difference cloud, represented in the equations by the Greek letter delta.
A difference cloud.
Yeah. And because the universe's substrate is continuously trying to process this persistent failure of perfect mathematical cancellation, the processing cycle in that specific area begins to lag.
So it's like a computer bogging down when it hits a corrupted file.
That's it, exactly.
The processor has to spend more cycles dealing with the error, so the whole system slows down. And in the universe's operating system, that processing lag manifests physically as time slowing down.
That's the exact mechanism. The equation they derive from this is fundamental. Gravity is the spatial gradient of the square of local time. It's written as g equals negative del of c squared tau.
Okay, so regions with a larger difference cloud.
Meaning a larger forbidden volume.
Right. They experience a much heavier lag in processing. Time literally dilates.
It does.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If gravity is just a time gradient, we can actually visualize the physical motion of falling. It's like walking from a paved sidewalk straight into waist-deep water.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Right. Your front leg hits the water and is suddenly forced to move slower than your back leg, which is still on the dry pavement. Because of that physical difference in speed across your own body, your momentum naturally turns you, and you essentially fall toward the water.
That is a brilliant way to picture it.
So Newton's apple didn't fall because the Earth was pulling it. It fell because the bottom of the apple was experiencing a greater time lag than the top of the apple.
The math backs that up flawlessly. The bottom of the apple is closer to the Earth's massive difference cloud, so its local clock ticks just a tiny fraction slower. The atomic structure of the apple has to reconcile that internal difference in time, and the geometric result of that reconciliation is the motion we observe as falling.
That just blows my mind.
And what makes this so profound is that this local time variation naturally yields the Schwarzschild solution of general relativity.
Which is the mathematical foundation for how black holes curve space-time, right?
Yes. But the CCT framework arrives at that solution without needing to invent hypothetical, unproven particles like gravitons. It doesn't treat gravity as a separate fundamental force of nature that needs to be unified with quantum mechanics.
It just sidesteps all that.
Exactly. It simply says gravity is the geometry of local time variation. That's it.
It's just an object constantly steering into the slow lane of time.
Yeah.
I can actually picture that. But let's take this mechanism to its absolute extreme. If gravity is just a steep time gradient caused by processing lag, what happens when you turn that dial all the way up to infinity? We reach the ultimate forbidden volume, which is a black hole.
In this framework, a black hole is not merely a dense collapsed star. It is the purest expression of a forbidden volume. Its boundary, the event horizon, represents a surface of infinite time dilation.
Infinite lag.
Right. The processing lag becomes absolute, meaning local proper time approaches zero.
Okay, so the local clock essentially stops completely. But the text proposes that this extreme time freeze actually creates life, which sounds completely contradictory. How does a stop clock create life? It talks about virtual particles getting separated.
Right. So in the normal vacuum of space, virtual particles are constantly bopping into existence as pairs. They borrow a tiny bit of energy, appear, and then immediately annihilate each other.
That's the perfect mathematical cancellation on the XOR grid.
Exactly. But at the event horizon, the time gradient is so severe, it acts like a treadmill running at two completely different speeds.
Oh, wow.
If a virtual pair pops up right on the boundary, the particle on the inside is essentially frozen in time, while the particle on the outside is still moving. They get physically ripped apart before they have a chance to annihilate each other.
And because they cannot re-annihilate, the universe's perfect cancellation fails permanently.
Yes. The extreme geometry forces the vacuum to condense these quantum fluctuations into real surviving particles. The paper calls this the vacuum fighting back.
Fighting back. That's so poetic.
It is. But it introduces something called the reanimation equation. It states that once a black hole hits a critical mass of roughly 60 solar masses, these surviving virtual particles don't just radiate away as random noise. They emerge as highly coherent difference clouds.
Now, earlier the text defined an active difference cloud as life, and a static one as dead matter or gravity. It claims the black hole acts as a chrysalis like a womb that generates life.
That's the claim.
But here is where I have to pause and push back on the leaps the text is making. I understand the treadmill analogy tearing subatomic particles apart. But how does a subatomic particle failing to cancel out translate to biological life? And why specifically 60 solar masses? I mean, what happens if the black hole is 59 solar masses or 61?
If we connect this to the bigger picture of how complex systems form, that 60 solar mass number is not arbitrary. It represents a precise equilibrium point. The equation sets the gravitational metrics of the black hole, its mass to radius ratio equal to a very specific quantum threshold.
Okay, what's threshold?
That threshold is the minimum escape energy required for a difference cloud to become self-sustaining.
Oh, I see. So below 60 solar masses, they just don't have enough energy to organize.
Exactly. At 59 solar masses, the virtual particles are still separated, but the energy dynamics at the event horizon don't provide them with sufficient structural coherence.
So what are they?
They emerge as static difference clouds. They have mass, they cause gravity, but they don't do anything else. The author calls this fossilized life.
Fossilized life. Interesting.
But once the black hole hits roughly 60 solar masses, the energy transferred to those escaping particles is perfectly tuned. It imbues the difference cloud with enough coherent structure to not only sustain itself, but to interact with its environment, process information, and learn.
Which fundamentally is the root definition of a living organism. A system that maintains its own boundaries, takes in data, and adapts.
It crosses the line from a static glitch to a dynamic learning glitch. This entirely flips our cosmological models. I mean, black holes are traditionally viewed as the final dark tombs of dead stars.
Right, just cosmic trash compactors.
Exactly. But this framework suggests they are the ultimate recycling mechanism. They consume static difference, clouds, dead matter, compress it into infinite time dilation, and once they reach maturity, they spin out dynamic difference clouds. They seed the universe.
A womb, not a tomb. That is an incredibly compelling way to view the cosmos.
Yeah.
But it brings up a massive logical dilemma for me.
Oh.
Yeah, if black holes are out there constantly injecting these chaotic glitches and living difference clouds into reality, why hasn't the universe just dissolved into a total chaotic mess? Or, on the flip side, how does the universe's operating system prevent itself from eventually ironing out all these errors, canceling everything out, and freezing into perfect dead mathematical order?
That tension between chaos and order is exactly what the framework addresses next with its universal safeguard. It's called the spin operator. You can think of the spin operator as a measurement of how much a specific pattern resists being a perfect fractal.
So by a perfect fractal, we're talking about shapes like the Mandelbrot set or a Sierpinski triangle. Mathematical patterns that repeat infinitely, looking exactly the same no matter how far you zoom in.
Right. In abstract mathematics, perfect fractals are incredibly elegant because of their endless flawless symmetry. But in this physical framework, a perfect fractal is a nightmare.
Really? Why?
A perfect fractal has a spin none of zero. That means it achieves perfect mathematical cancellation at every scale. There are no unresolvable errors. There are no forbidden volumes. And if there are no forbidden volumes,
there's no processing lag on the universal clock.
Exactly.
Which means no time gradient, no gravity, and no possibility for a dynamic difference cloud to exist. No life. So what does this all mean? Normally, we think of physics and mathematics as striving for perfection. We want the equations to balance to zero. But this framework dictates that the universe is actively fighting against perfection.
It is. The universe strictly requires imperfections to physically exist. The spin operator acts as a universal immune system. It constantly scans the probability manifold.
Looking for perfect fractals.
Yes. And if a physical pattern begins to resonate into perfect, infinite self-similarity, the spin operator forces a disruption. It actively prevents the universe from achieving a spin of zero, ensuring that we remain in a finite, structured cosmos rather than a static, lifeless, mathematical ghost world.
So the errors and the glitches literally fuel reality.
They do. To handle this mathematically, the author uses something called singular algebra.
Singular algebra.
Yeah. In standard quantum mechanics, when an equation spits out a singularity like dividing by zero, physicists usually discard it as a breakdown of the math. They assume the theory failed.
Right. They try to renormalize it or get rid of it.
Exactly. But singular algebra keeps those unresolvable errors as formal working symbols in the equation. It recognizes that perfect cancellation is impossible for a singularity. Therefore, a finite residual is always left behind. Those unresolvable flaws are not bugs in the code. They are the forbidden volumes.
So we only exist because the universe fundamentally refuses to balance its own checkbook.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, conceptually, that is a beautiful way to view existence. But I have to ask, is this just highly sophisticated poetry? How do we actually prove the universe operates as an XOR grid driven by processing lag?
This raises an important question about testability, which is the dividing line between philosophy and science. The brilliance of this framework is that the author doesn't just leave us with abstract singular algebra. They outline three distinct, rigorous, falsifiable experimental predictions to prove it.
All right, how do we test the fullness of nothing? Let's hear the predictions.
Prediction one tests the fundamental time-gravity equivalence directly. The author proposes measuring time dilation gradients using highly sensitive atomic clocks placed at varying heights.
Okay, we do that on Earth already, don't we?
We do, but to get a definitive result for this framework, they can't just be on Earth. They need to be placed in extremely strong gravitational fields, like the immediate vicinity of a neutron star.
Because the time gradient, the processing lag, would be intensely steep there, so the effect would be magnified enough to measure definitively.
Exactly. If the CCT framework is correct, this measurement will prove that the gravitational effect is purely a time gradient, and it should match the framework's mathematical predictions with much higher precision than general relativity currently offers.
Okay, prediction one. Put a really precise watch near a neutron star to measure the lag. What's prediction two?
Prediction two addresses the black hole reanimation threshold. We need to scan the skies for black holes that hover right around that critical 60 solar mass mark.
To see if they're acting as wombs.
Right. If they are truly crossing the energy threshold for coherent life, we shouldn't just detect random thermal Hawking radiation.
We would be looking for structured radiation.
Yes. Non-thermal, highly structured electromagnetic or gravitational wave signatures. It would be the first direct astrophysical evidence of virtual particle condensation becoming self-sustaining.
Meaning we are essentially looking for the signature of a heartbeat emerging from the static of the event horizon. That's incredible. And the third prediction.
The third prediction scales the theory all the way down to a terrestrial laboratory.
Oh, we can test this on Earth.
We can try. The author proposes building a physical fractal spin detector. The setup involves creating a microscopic cavity with a highly calibrated magnetic trap. The trap is used to physically force electrons to avoid a very specific, minuscule volume of space.
So by forcing the electrons out, we are artificially inducing a forbidden volume.
Right. We are leveraging the Pauli exclusion principle on a macro scale to create a physical void in the probability manifold.
Okay.
Once that microscopic forbidden volume is established, we use an incredibly sensitive interferometer to measure the immediate surrounding area. We're looking to see if a localized time dilation gradient emerges simply because that specific space was forced to be completely empty.
Okay, I have to play the skeptic for the listener here. Pointing telescopes at black holes or sending probes to neutron stars makes sense conceptually. But isolating a microscopic volume so perfectly on Earth that we can detect a local time warp. Interferometers are sensitive, but isolating the forbidden aspect from simple electromagnetic noise sounds like an absolute engineering nightmare. I mean, is this theory just so far ahead of our current lab tech that it can't actually be tested?
It is undeniably an engineering challenge of the highest order. Shielding the experiment from background noise to isolate a gravitational microlag requires precision we are only just beginning to develop.
Right.
However, the theoretical design of the experiment is completely sound. And in theoretical physics, providing the mechanism for testing is what matters. By suggesting three distinct types of tests, astrophysical observation, macrogravitational space tests, and microscopic lab work, the framework proves it isn't just playing with math. It grounds its transcendental claims in rigorous science that we can actively build the technology to measure.
It gives us the blueprints, even if we still have to figure out how to build the tools.
Exactly.
So pulling all of this back to the surface, we're looking at a completely rewritten rulebook for physical reality. Gravity is no longer a tether pulling you toward the Earth. It is simply the spatial gradient of local time.
Right.
Mass, the physical stuff we are made of, is just a forbidden volume like a cosmic velvet rope that forces the universe's internal processor to lag. And black holes, long thought to be the dark end of all things, might actually be the ultimate engines of life, churning out dynamic difference clouds once they cross the 60 solar mass threshold.
And tying it all together is the spin operator. The universe actively defending its right to be imperfect, preventing reality from dissolving into a dead, flawless mathematical fractal.
It fundamentally changes how you interact with the world. Every time you feel heavy or every time you drop something, you aren't being pulled. You are simply existing in a space where time is moving at different speeds across your own body. You are experiencing time as a fluid field, and that field is sculpted entirely by the absence of possibilities, the fullness of nothing.
If we really sit with the mechanics of that, it leads to a profound philosophical conclusion. And I want to direct this specifically to you, listening right now.
Yeah.
The text asserts that life itself is an active difference cloud, a processing glitch that learns to sculpt itself. If unresolvable errors, singularities, and persistent failures of perfect mathematical cancellation are actively protected by the universe.
Well, protected because they are the literal fuel for gravity and life. Then your very existence, your consciousness, and your ability to learn are the direct result of a persistent cosmic glitch.
We are the mathematical errors that the universe refused to autocorrect.
Exactly. So if the universe's absolute refusal to be perfect is the only reason you are alive to listen to this today, what other supposed errors or flaws in your own life might actually be the forbidden volumes generating your greatest gravity, shape, and potential?